This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 9th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, letter carriers nationwide will be collecting food donations door-to-door this Saturday. We'll hear why. The Federal Trade Commission is examining ways to crack down on greenwashing. That story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's usually How on Earth, but jury duty selection of today's scheduled host has preempted that plan. Instead, we'll have the newly rebranded This is Science podcast from the Union of Concerned Scientists. At 9 a.m. comes another archival recording of The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first it's time for the headlines. With KGNU's John Kellen.
The Colorado legislature has wrapped up its 2023 session, adjourning just hours ago with a mixed bag of results. Over the course of the session that convened in January, lawmakers addressed such issues as property taxes, gun safety, and abortion. While state Democrats are hailing victories on issues they say are most important to Coloradans, state Republicans say their minority caucus was denied the opportunity to collaborate. Democrats say their achievements this session include legislation to curb housing costs, such as the proposal to redirect a portion of Tabor refunds toward property tax relief. Lawmakers passed, and Governor Jared Polis has signed into law at least four major pieces of gun safety legislation as the state and the nation continue to confront a record wave of gun violence. New laws include raising the minimum wage to buy a firearm to 21 and an extreme risk or red flag law that expands those who can petition to keep guns from the hands of those deemed a risk to themselves or others. Second Amendment advocates are already challenging two of those new gun safety laws in court. Lawmakers also passed bills that protect abortion patients and providers against out-of-state investigations, prohibit deceptive advertising from crisis pregnancy centers, and expand insurance coverage for abortions. In a defeat for the governor, lawmakers rejected a housing proposal that would have imposed state mandates and stripped local governments of their authority over land use and zoning. In another Democratic setback, a measure dubbed the Just Cause Eviction Bill died in the state Senate. KGNU's Colette Zarnicki explains.
With only an hour left on Sunday night, Colorado lawmakers debated changes to the state's property tax legislation and left the Just Cause Eviction Bill, or House Bill 1171, without a vote. The Just Cause Eviction Bill would have prevented landlords from evicting tenants who did not breach their lease agreement. Supporters said the bill would have decreased evictions and given tenants 30 days to leave if they were served an eviction notice. As it stands, tenants have only 10 days to find a new place, often leaving many people, especially the disabled, houseless. In many states, including Colorado, landlords are not required to give a reason for eviction at the end of leases and in month-to-month housing situations. In March, about 2,000 Denver renters faced eviction, more than double pre-pandemic levels, according to the Denverite. Melissa Mejia, the head of state and local policy with the Community Economic Defense Project, said that thousands of Colorado families are at risk of losing their homes because of historically high rents. Close to 40,000 evictions in Colorado happen each year, according to state estimates. Representative Javier Mabry, one of the bill's supporters, tweeted, "We had the opportunity to make real change and protect our most vulnerable citizens, but we fell short." For KGNU, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
More than 11,000 student loan borrowers in Colorado have been approved for public service loan forgiveness. Public service loan forgiveness is for public employees like teachers, law enforcement, and those in social services who have made at least 120 qualifying monthly payments on federal student loans. The announcement by the U.S. Department of Education yesterday forgives the remaining balance for eligible borrowers and coincides with Public Service Recognition Week. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said the Biden-Harris administration is committed to public service loan forgiveness for those who have spent a decade or more in service to their communities and the country. The federal public service emergency for COVID-19 ends on Thursday. KGNU's Steve Miller explains what that means for Colorado.
While the pandemic is no longer considered an emergency, health experts say it is still important to get vaccines and treatments, especially those in high-risk groups. Also, this will be the end of free at-home COVID tests. But rec centers in Denver will be giving out free at-home tests while supplies last. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment says the phone-based exposure notification app will be decommissioned Thursday. Users will receive a notice on their phones saying that the service is no longer operational and they prompt to delete their app. The Exposure Notification Act was used because the COVID virus had the ability to spread before people had symptoms, and it would spread so quickly that it would overwhelm manual contact tracing efforts. Reports of new COVID cases are averaging below 200 per day in Colorado, which is as low as it's been since the summer of 2020. Since the start of the pandemic in 2020, more than 1,100,000 people in the United States have died from the coronavirus. Of those, more than 15,000 were Coloradans. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
A major waterway restoration agreement aimed at restoring a 6.5-mile stretch of the South Platte River has been signed in Denver. The Waterway Resiliency Program is an intergovernmental agreement expected to restore the South Platte from 6th Avenue to 58th Avenue in Denver and Adams counties. Officials are calling the multimillion-dollar plan an investment in flood risk management, ecosystem restoration, and recreation. Denver Mayor Michael B. Hancock and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Assistant Secretary Michael Connor signed the partnership agreement yesterday. The agreement establishes project goals, cost sharing, and funding reimbursement requirements and designates the City and County of Denver as the project lead. In a press release, the city said the project team will work to further define program plans. This speaker is Governor Jared Polis. On June 1st, President Joe Biden will deliver the commencement speech to the 2023 Air Force Academy graduating class. The third time Biden has delivered the address to the Colorado Springs Academy, the first two times during his terms as vice president. Biden will become the 9th president to speak at an Air Force Academy graduation. In today's weather, we're expecting a warm one. Look for mostly sunny skies with a high temperature of 81 in Denver, 76 in Boulder, 78 in Fort Collins, and a high of 60 degrees in Nederland. There's a 20% chance of rain in the metro area after 5 p.m. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Food inflation has been a reality for anyone buying groceries in the past couple of years, but it disproportionately affects those with lower incomes. With the declared pandemic health emergency officially ending Thursday, many emergency programs put in place to reinforce the social safety net are sunsetting. This increases pressure on local food banks like the Emergency Family Assistance Association, or EFA, in Boulder. But letter carriers are stepping up to keep their shelves stocked. Joining me in the studio are Walter O'Toole, food bank manager of EFA, and Diane Santoyo, National Association of Letter Carriers, Branch 642, coordinator of the Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive. Thanks to you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Diane, let's start with you. What is the Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive and how long has it been going on?
Thank you, Shannon and KGNU, for having us this morning and your help and support in spreading the word of our 31st annual food drive happening this Saturday, May 13th. It's one of the largest or the largest food drive across the country right now across America. And right here in Boulder, Lafayette, and Louisville, letter carriers are preparing to deliver food drive bags and postcards as well to the mailboxes of our customers, announcing, again, this Saturday, May 13th, our food drive is happening. And for them to fill a bag of non-perishable food, leave it at their mailbox in time for their letter carrier, and we will take care of the rest.
And these bags, I believe these are the yellow plastic bags with different logos, KGN uses among them,
right.
That have been, it arrived in my mailbox last week.
Wonderful.
So just you know what to do with it now.
Right.
Walter, how long has EFFA partnered with the letter carriers for the Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive?
Yeah, I think it's been over 20 years
right
now. Uh-huh. And yeah, it's huge. It's the biggest food drive that we have all year by a factor of seven.
Wow.
Seven times larger than the next largest food drive. We absolutely rely on this partnership, especially it's happening in May, and most of our food drives happen around November and December in the holidays. And so it's really a very impactful boost to the shelf-stable foods that we have available for our families.
Okay, well, let's talk about just how much impact there is. How much food, as in pounds or tons, does this drive bring into EFFA?
Yeah, so last year in 2022, it was nearly 25,000 pounds of food. That is equivalent roughly to about 20,000 meals. And it's worth nearly $50,000 at least. Basically, you know, it's enough to stock our food pantry with shelf stable and canned goods for about 1 month. So it really solidifies us for the spring.
Let's take this region-wide to our listeners as well who are in Fort Collins, Denver, Netherlands. How can they participate, or is it an option with the letter carriers in their region?
As far as I know, it's across America. Like I said before, the largest single-day food drive in America. So, yes, across the region, they will also have food drive bags in their mailbox as well as postcards. To your question before, I'm sorry, the very first national food drive was back in 1993. And since then, letter carriers and volunteers in their community have collected 1.82 billion pounds of food. Last year, letter carriers in the Boulder County collected, as Walter said, 37,000 pounds of food. So many thanks to our customers, including our business partners and partners that have helped us with their help and support.
Walter, the pandemic emergency response programs to ensure food security during the pandemic have been withdrawn one by one. What have you seen as the concrete impacts from your perspective as the food bank manager of EFFA?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And we have seen a pretty close correlation of those programs sunsetting and more families coming and individuals coming to EFFA for food services. So right now, we probably see about 625 families and individuals every week. In 2020, when there was the most coronavirus assistance programs and responses available, that number was more like 250. So, you
close to triple.
It's close to triple, yeah. And it, you know, didn't happen overnight, but pretty much every time, yeah, one of these programs sunsets, we see an increase in the amount of folks who need our food services, and particularly with the recent sunsetting of the SNAP benefits, we've seen a big increase there. And also we see sort of anecdotally that people need more food when they come to us because, you know, they're trying to fill that gap of missing SNAP benefits. And so, yeah, it's definitely put a strain on our ability to provide enough food for everybody who comes through the door. We're doing it, and this food drive is a huge, huge help.
So we know how people who are able to can help by placing food in the bags outside of their door on Saturday. How can people who may need the help get in touch with EFFA?
Sure. So for food assistance, you can just come during our shopping hours, which are 12 to 4:30 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and 12 to 7 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays. No appointments needed for food services. You arrive, and if you're If you've never used our services before, there'll be a brief form that you fill out for intake. But beyond that, you can come once a week and get groceries for you and your family.
My guests today have been Walter O'Toole, Food Bank Manager of the Emergency Family Assistance Association, or EFA, and Diane Santoyo of the National Association of Letter Carriers. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
When a dust-up is a good thing. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Drought is threatening one of the biggest fruit and vegetable-producing countries for all of the European Union, Spain.
Nearly half of Spain's crop exports, like lettuce and strawberries, have been grown in the southeastern part of the country that uses diverted water from the river Tagus to the north.
However, Euronews reports that facing climate change and increased desertification, the government has decided to limit the amount of water taken from the river, which has dropped so low in some areas it's possible to cross by foot.
Drought has hit Spain and other parts of Europe since 2018, and last summer was the hottest ever. At the end of April this year, Spain endured a heat wave similar to what usually happens in July or August. A report last week by the organization World Weather Attribution showed the heat wave would almost certainly not have happened without human-induced climate change.
To make matters worse, there are high chances of El Niño conditions occurring in the Pacific Ocean by September, which would likely fuel higher global temperatures.
The basis for life in the ocean is phytoplankton, plant-like organisms that live close to the surface and provide food for a range of marine animals.
Also called microalgae, phytoplankton require nutrients, including nitrates, phosphates, and sulfur, to survive. And according to new research led by Oregon State University, they obtain much of it from atmospheric dust that's lifted from the land into the air by wind and is transported vast distances.
As Earth.com explains, the dust is composed of small particles of various minerals and organic compounds that come from both natural sources, such as deserts or wildfires, as well as from human activities, such as agriculture.
Phytoplankton sequester carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and convert it into organic matter through photosynthesis, some of which sinks to the deep sea and is locked away.
The amount of dust in the atmosphere can be influenced by everything from volcanic eruptions to land use changes and is not always beneficial. It can contribute to air pollution and erosion. However, the new study shows that by supporting phytoplankton, dust can play a big role in mitigating climate change. As Kermit the Frog would tell you, it's not easy being green, and the Federal Trade Commission says it should be for consumers, but not for imposters.
Since 1992, the FTC has published its Green Guide to help companies avoid making deceptive marketing claims in response to a growing demand for environmentally friendly and sustainable goods by consumers who have no way of vetting products that tout everything from being recyclable to organic.
The guides, which were most recently revised in 2012, are about to get a makeover in part to tackle issues like greenwashing following complaints that fossil fuel companies, big agriculture, major food producers, and other polluting industries are making claims that don't pass the sniff test.
The new version will also attempt to take the gray area out of green terms, such as net zero, biodegradability, carbon offsets, or other vague language that implies corporate responsibility but lacks a precise definition.
The FTC's goal is to clarify rules for companies and outline how they can substantiate their claims, such as product certifications and seals of approval that imply, for example, that materials or energy sources are renewable.
For consumer, environmental, and clean energy groups, The objective would be to stop what has been called an insidious campaign of disinformation aimed at capitalizing on consumers' concerns.
The guides are non-binding, but could help the FTC when it takes legal action against companies. The public can submit comments by June 13th and attend a workshop titled Talking Trash at the FTC on May 23rd to discuss recycling. And finally, it might be time to show moss some respect. Mosses have lived on Earth for over 450 million years, surviving in extremes from the driest deserts to the windswept hills of Antarctica. Despite covering an area equal to the landmass of Canada, mosses haven't been studied as much as other plants, but according to a new report, we'd be lost without them.
Researchers from the University of New South Wales, Sydney, looked at mosses growing on soil in 123 ecosystems across the globe to better understand their roles in their environments. The scientists were, in their own words, gobsmacked to learn the dozens of
providing habitat for microbes and even fighting pathogens harmful to other organisms and people.
Mosses take in moisture from the air, unlike vascular plants that draw up water from their roots. But mosses do have roots, called rhizoids, that anchor them to the surface, making them excellent at controlling erosion.
On top of all that, the authors say mosses are a vital ally to combat climate change, storing over 6 gigatons more carbon than bare soils without plant cover.
Unfortunately, mosses are threatened globally by livestock, land clearing, and even changing climates. That said, mosses might outlive us in the end. The researchers found that when some dry out, they don't die. They can live in suspended animation forever until they receive water and spring back to life.
That's it for this week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to make the comment. I'm listening to KGNU this morning, Wednesday, the 3rd, and there's an interview with Senator McCormick regarding greenhouse gas and the poor air quality here along the Front Range. And her response is that leaf blowers, mowers, and e-bikes will be the solution. And when the interviewer has pressed regarding the largest greenhouse gas emissions creator in the Front Range, which is the oil and gas sector, she gave an offhanded comment regarding giving the oil and gas industry the reins to come up with a plan, basically. And I feel like this is an atrocity in the works. The largest greenhouse gas emitter in Colorado is not forced to do anything. And I know that's not KGNU's job to bring that up, but I feel like there should be a lot more voice put into and emphasis put into KGNU or from KGNU to raise that. I mean, the interviewer did ask again about legislation specifically for the oil and gas industry, but again, it was just the air quality we all know is terrible here, and I think it's important to address it at the largest source. And this legislation seems to be kind of a joke. Get consumers to spend on small internal combustion tools versus tackling the air quality issue pretty much at the source. And I feel like KGNU should have done a little bit more legwork on this and given the interviewer the ability to really press that question and emphasize the need for the oil and gas industry to be held accountable.
KGNU has a problem connecting callers to the on-air programs. During COVID, it was worse because radio hosts were often alone in the station. I tried calling in last Friday's connection program without success. Rob Prince, Ibrahim Kazaruni, and Joel Edelstein, all local credentialed experts in their fields, were having a really good discussion. I'm sure other callers share my frustration.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to John Kellen, Steve Miller, Colette Sarnicki, Alexis Kenyon, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and in-studio guests, Diane Santoyo and Walter O'Toole, for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for This is Science. That's ahead after these headlines from the BBC.